All right. So, guys, first off, I want to find out. Now, Vince and Mary were on the call last week where we did the marketing plan and tracking sheet. So, I know, Sally, you said you watched the video afterwards.
I did.
Yeah. And, Chris, did you have a chance? I know you're on vacation. Did you have a chance to take a look at the video at all from last week?
No, but I'm watching it tonight as soon as I get home after we get off this call.
Okay. I kind of wanted to get a little review on that to kind of show the importance of where I think it's going to really help you guys with, keeping yourself on track and finding out where the holes are in the business. One of the things that I found when I was running my business where I had employees and everything, what I found is that if whatever you don't track usually doesn't get done. And anytime we get to a point where we're having difficulty because, maybe we're not closing deals or it just doesn't seem like the leads are coming in or the appointments are coming in, it can usually be traced down to, basically your marketing. And so the goal with the marketing plan is that you're going to be able to make a commitment at the beginning of the month to put out as much marketing or enough marketing to be able to get enough phone calls to get enough deals. And so I want to really encourage everybody to use it. And I even want to have a challenge. I really think that basically if you are to commit to doing this marketing plan for 60 days, and if you want to show it to me and I'll approve whatever marketing you want to put out, I guarantee you, you're going to have a deal locked up within 60 days. And I don't know what I'll do if you don't, but maybe I'll offer something special to you guys. If you've done all the marketing and you've talked to the sellers and everything, you will have a deal. So I kind of want to give like a 60-day challenge for all of us and see what we can do with a big push to, put some money in our pocket, because that's really what we've been wanting to do. And I think that maybe things kind of got in the way for every single one of us. So this is kind of like a time that I want to recommit. So if you're with me and you're in it, then my goal is for everybody to email me a copy of their marketing plan, and I will look it over and get back to you with any suggestions I might have. So are you guys up to it?
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Yep, for a 60-day plan? Okay, cool.
Hey, Mike, I'm going to a conference and I'm going on vacation. I leave tomorrow on the red eye.
Oh, wow.
So, I want to do this, but I'm not coming back till September 4th, but I'll still be working sometimes.
Okay.
But not with the intensity, not like every single day. So how do you want me to handle that?
I want you to, I want you to get a marketing plan for September, even because they're going to be back on the 4th. You're still going to have three and a half weeks.
September
so
is fine,
month.
Yeah,
maybe that would be a good way to start since we're finishing out the summer. Anyway, just a thought to do it for the whole month. So start with September. It'd be more fair to Mary.
Yeah, and so I want to make make a fun little game or reward out of this that kind of makes it a little more interesting. I got to think of what I'll do, but basically I want to try to be able to reward, the people that have followed through and maybe have something cool that we plan for people that are able to one, get through and actually commit and finish the whole plan. The other one would be people that do deals. I just want to have like a good team atmosphere to actually make some stuff happen. So does anybody have any questions on that marketing plan? From last week or actually watching the video?
Well, my phone call cut out because I'm on the road, so I think right when you were maybe reviewing it, and then I'd be back in. So if there's stuff that if it's all explained in the video, then I'll watch that. But was there anything that I missed during those couple minutes just recently?
I missed what you just said, the last part of Chris.
Was there anything that you went over in the past couple of minutes about the marketing plan? Just something about 60 days, and then my phone cut out, my call failed.
Okay. Well, no, what I want to do is I want to kind of do a little 60-day challenge. as kind of like a reset for us to be able to recommit to the marketing and talking to sellers and getting deals on the contract and actually really have a goal to make flip our first deal within the next 60 days. So I'm going to be thinking of some sort of reward or something that we can do as a celebration for accomplishing that. And I'll get back to you on it, but it's just kind of like a let's regroup here. Let's kind of figure out a clean slate. Any challenges we've had in the past, let's let them go and let's move forward and make some stuff happen. So that was the purpose of that. So that being said, does anybody have anything that's happened lately that any good news to share or any challenges you've had or any sellers you've talked to that maybe need the help of the group that we can kind of work through something?
Yeah, Mike, I guess I've been calling sellers all day, all day. And, you know, and last week, I think I told you, I was just focusing on taxes because my accountant was coming over on Friday. So, you know, I had all these leads, and I've been working them all day. It just seems to me, I mean, so often I get somebody who seems really interested, and then they you know, I talk to them, I give them a lot of information, and then they decide against it. Or, it seems like it happens a lot. Is that me, or do you get that too?
Well, I it's not just you. I mean, I get stuff like that too, where you get a seller that things seem like they're going well, but then they decide to either do something else or they just fall off the face of the earth and you just can't reach them. Is that one of the things also where you follow up and then leave a message and they never call you back? Or?
Yeah, well, that happened to that guy in West Seattle who had that house, and he was going to take it off the market. He assured me, and then I followed up with him on Monday, you know, a few times, and then the next day, and he didn't get back to me. The lead that I had this weekend, and thank you so much for getting back to me on Sunday morning. You know, I went online, and I put together a bunch of stuff, spent an hour putting together. And, you know, I mean, it was my first time that I put together a whole bunch of stuff on lease options. And, you know, I tried to simplify it, but give him enough information and gave him an offer. And then he comes, I mean, he was interested, and then he comes back and says, well, I'm not going to do that. You know, I just I'm not interested in that. So, I don't know. I get so excited. It's like, oh, I've got another one. You know, it looks like it's going to happen. And then it just kind of fizzles.
Time passes between when you feel they're on board to when they change their mind?
Well, this guy I talked to, a couple days. The guy I talked to this weekend, I talked to him on Saturday, told him I would get back to him with the information. I emailed you Saturday night, put something together Sunday, and then called him on Monday, you know, because I had told him I'd call him on Monday. And he decided he didn't want to move forward with it. He was very interested in it when we originally talked, you know, but he said he wanted more information. And I guess he didn't commit to it, he was very interested. And then, you know, I mean, I've had callers, one guy who's in Arizona, Tucson today, and he's renting out his place, but he'd be interested in selling it. And, you know, but he'd rather sell it through a realtor than a lease option. And then the guy in West Seattle who, you know, he was actually going to take it off the market. You know, he vowed to me, I called him just to follow up saying that I really wouldn't be interested unless you know, things didn't work out in the listing. And he said, oh, no, it's going to be off the market on Monday. Well, it was still on the market. And then, you know, I was going to come over on Wednesday, and I followed up with him, and, you know, 2 days later, and he never got back to me, and I followed up with him like 3 times. I mean, I don't want to just, you know, keep badgering somebody, so.
Yeah. I mean, and in a case like that, sometimes the realtor is the one that gets in the way.
So, okay.
You know, the listing is going to expire, and the realtor calls back and says, well, you know, we should give it another go. I think that the market's improving, and maybe we can do a little price adjustment. I'll do an open house this weekend, and And then the seller says, oh, well, you know, I talked to this investor who thinks that I could just do a lease option. And and the realtor's, oh, well, lease option, investor, you know, what are they trying to do? Are they trying to make a profit and have you get less money? Or, oh, those things will never work out. So, you know, sometimes they sell against you.
Okay.
And, you know, that sometimes is a challenge, too, when you, you know, I've experienced this with sellers, not just with lease options, but for sellers that seem like they're on board with me buying their house.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they're pretty excited, and then they kind of want to think about it, and then a couple days later they turn around, they change their mind. And a lot of times it has to do with them talking with a family member or something like that, and the family member goes, oh, or a friend goes, oh, I wouldn't deal with an investor. You know, they're just looking to deal your house or something. So I guess
I've had three appointments that I felt were solid, and I felt my presentation was solid and my preparation was solid. But when I got there, not both parties were there. I mean, that was the agreement, but just give me the paperwork, you know, and I'll talk it over. And then I follow up and it falls apart.
Right. Well, that's a huge one. So, when you got a one-legged appointment like that, and you're relying on one spouse to be able to relay the information to the other one, no one's going to be able to explain it as well as you are. And there's that expression that says the confused mind says no. So what we are offering is something that is somewhat out of the box.
Yes.
And, you know, it's not the norm. And so I can see why, you know, the one spouse talking to the other one and saying, well, this is what this person wants to do. And you know, they want to get a property and find a buyer and this assignment. And even though it might be a great idea, the other spouse goes, oh, well, gosh, I'm not quite sure about that. You know, that kind of doesn't seem right. And so they just say no, because it's easy to say no. So I guess the thing that I would recommend is kind of strike when the iron's hot. If you have a seller that think is on board, what I would do, and are these happening after this is the in-person meeting for you, Sally, right? But it's on phone.
Those were three in-person meetings, yes.
Okay. In those in-person meetings, you didn't have a way that you're able to really lock them up because you didn't have both owners. Is that right?
Right. I had the paperwork. Well, I thought I did on a couple of, actually two, but, you know, for whatever reason, somebody couldn't be there, or in one case it was the daughter, and I think you remember on the phone the parents didn't speak English, and they had to talk. She would explain it to the parents.
Okay. Well, those are kind of anomaly cases, and in any three or four appointments, it's easy to have, you know, all of them go wrong. We're going to have to up the number of appointments we go to before finding out if this is like a chronic issue.
Okay.
But one thing I can recommend, especially in your case, Mary, is if you have, if you've got a seller where on the phone they're showing some agreement, my recommendation, at least starting out, if you have time, is to go on those appointments and use a little bit of, and you know, play the reluctant role as far as
not sure it's going to work.
Well,
for
you know, I this would be something I think could work. But I really would need to see the house to see if your house would even qualify. And when the seller kind of realizes that it's possible that you don't want to work with them, then sometimes they're more likely to want to keep an appointment, and they're wishing, you know, for you to work with them, because then it goes from being a sale to having them have to sell you, which is really what we want. We want sellers to convince us to work with them.
Okay. All right.
So I would try to go on the appointment to let them know that you need to see if their house would be one that would work, and use language that gets them talking to convince you to work with them. And then if you get any kind of interest, then see what you can do to get the paperwork out and say, hey, why? And then what you want to do is you can lead the seller into signing the paperwork by taking a little bit of control,
Mm-hmm.
If you say, do you think this is something that would work or something, and if you give them the choice where they go, should I do it or should I not, sometimes they think of all the things that could go wrong. But you might want to start off, if you kind of get some agreement with the process, you might just tell the seller to say, I'll tell you what, why don't we do this? I don't even know if this is something that will work or not. Why don't we just get some paperwork together? Of course, this is not going to stop you or prevent you from selling on your own.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds to me like the price that you're looking for, the monthly payment, looks like something that I might be able to work with some of my buyers. Why don't we give it a shot for maybe 15 or 20 days and see what I can find with my buyers list. And then best case scenario, I find somebody right away and we get somebody in and you've got your buyer. Worst case scenario, you still have all of your other options available to you.
Okay.
So what do you think? Should we just get started today and then, you know, get ready with the paperwork and just kind of assume the close?
Okay. So,
right.
And when they ask for more information and you're just kind of sending out an outline of stuff, do you actually send over a copy of the lease option agreement that you had given us? Do you send that out as part of the information, like this is how we start and, you know, this is the form that we have filled out that enables us to go out and market it to the folks, you know, who actually want to buy your house?
You know, I've done that in the past, and I guess what I find is some of the same things that you do, is that sometimes when people ask for more information, it's a smokescreen objection. They're really not interested, but they want to make feel like they are.
Okay. Okay.
You know, I mean, have you ever, I mean, you probably, we all have probably done the same thing. You know, you're walking through a place and there's like some vendors that are out there and they kind of reel you in and go, hey, look at my widget here, blah, blah, blah. And then you kind of feel bad for just saying, hey, no, I'm not interested. So if they have an informational package, you go, hey, well, you know, I'll take this. I'll give you a call if, you know, look it over and talk with my husband or talk with my wife.
Okay.
You never have an intention to do anything. So that's probably what's going on. So so again, if somebody says, well, you just have some information to send me, then again, what I would probably do is go, well, I'll tell you what, I've got information, but quite frankly, I'm not even sure if your house would be one that would work. You know, if I would really like to see the inside, and if it looks like something that'll work, maybe we can make it and have a discussion there, and you can ask them anything you need. And that'll at least get you in the door. If you're getting a lot of leads, you're going to want to limit the number of people you go to so you're not just wasting your time. But if you're not doing a lot of appointments, you're going to do a lot better in the home.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Okay. A lot of these places are in North Tacoma, so it is, you know, a drive. But
yeah.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Thank you, Mike.
And so here's the other option. If you're going to have a lower closing ratio, but if you only work with the motivated, then you're going to be able to do plenty of deals just by email. So then you just have to up the marketing and you have to increase the number of people you talk to and just realize that you're going to have a lower close rate, and then you just got to take the emotion out of it and go, all right, well, if they're not interested now, we'll just put them on a follow-up and then we'll go to the next one.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I've been wondering if I should switch my marketing criteria because I was doing the, I was marketing toward Axe folks. So, and after that, I was going to go toward the equity, the people who had more equity in the same zips. But,
sure.
Yeah, I was just thinking, well, maybe I should start doing it right now.
Let me ask you a question on this. You were tracking your marketing before. You said you're getting a high response rate, but you had like a lot. Most of them were dead leads right from the get go.
I mean, I probably have called about 35 sellers today, and I mean, this is all kind of cumulative.
This is after Pat Live, right?
Right, after Pat Live, yeah. And so I have now been calling the folks who they have their number and they didn't leave any information, they hung up. And so I've been doing that as well. But, yes, it's after Pat Live, and the script is really simple from Pat Live. You know,
sure.
Give a house, what's the address, or, you know, that sort of thing.
Okay. Do they ask in the PetLife script if they are interested in selling?
The script is, they give me the date of the lead, the name, caller ID, does this caller have a house for sale, what is the address of the house, do the caller wish to be removed from the mailing list, comments. Oh, and when would the seller like to be called back, and the telephone number.
Okay. Are you only calling people back that say they have a house for sale?
Some people say they don't have a house for sale, but they give me the address and their phone number. So I call them back anyway. If they say remove me from the mailing list, I don't call them back. If they do say no and they don't give me the address to the house, then I'm assuming that they don't want to call back or be called back. But, you know, if they say don't remove me from the mailing list, then I call them back. And then in a couple cases I've had somebody say, you know, they don't have a house for sale right now, but they're going to keep my information. So that leads me to believe something. And then in one case somebody said, well, they don't have a house for sale, but they know somebody who does. So they're going to pass on the information. So I'm going to call those leads back as well.
Okay. You know what I'd like to do? Can you email me with your phone number for PetLife so I can call them and pretend to be a seller? I'd like to just kind of get an idea for how they're handling those calls.
Oh, sure. Sure. Absolutely. Uh-huh.
Okay.
I'll do that.
All right. So, the thing I'm curious is if you say that if they say they have a house to sell, that they're interested in selling and you're calling them, I'm assuming that these leads are you finding that these are low or no equity deals? That's kind of what we were expecting with that list, right?
Yeah, you know, some people have paid down their mortgage, though, in a couple cases. Yes, some are, yeah, I would say, though, most of them are what we're expecting as far as equity,
okay.
Which
but
is
we're
both
not getting any appointments, really, though, right?
That's correct.
Okay. We've got to figure out that might be where the disconnect is. Something's going on. I mean, if indeed you are getting people that are interested in selling,
mm-hmm.
It's possible that there's some kind of breakdown. Are you going straight to the axe deal, or are you trying to evaluate them as a purchase?
I have been asking if there's any equity. I have been asking. A lot of people want to know what I do, and so, you know, I explained that I'm a real estate investor. I say we can buy a number of ways. And then when we finally get into talking, then I do ask the question. I mean, if there is equity in there, I will ask, you know, so one of the ways we can buy is cash. And then I say, but, you know, typically if we buy it for cash, because we're using a large amount of our money, that we typically would need like a 30% below ARV. You know, I explain that sort of thing. So maybe I'm presenting
okay.
that incorrectly.
I wouldn't use the words ARV.
Well, I don't.
Okay.
The value
okay.
of the house,
okay.
yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And then I go
okay.
on to, you know, but if you know, I understand you're not in a rush to sell, so that may not work for you. But, you know, one of the other ways we can sell, and then I go into the lease option tenant.
Okay. I would try to make it a goal to find out more about their situation
mm-hmm.
so that to find out what might be a motivation so you can kind of tap on a few hot buttons.
Okay.
Because that's going to help you out rather than you. I've said it in the past, and what I really think that we're like a doctor. And what we do is we help to heal where it hurts. And
okay.
a doctor would never, you would never walk into a doctor's office and have the doctor explain, well, we can give you pill A, pill B, or pill C without
mm-hmm.
knowing, without diagnosing you.
Okay.
And
okay.
so you kind of got to find out where the pain is, and you got to, if the pain is something that we can help prevent through one of our
mm-hmm.
offers, then we explain that, and we explain it in a way that helps to heal the pain.
Okay.
So something like if a seller is getting transferred to a different
mm-hmm.
area, so they're going to be buying a house someplace else, then one thing we know is that they're going to be moving, and if they don't sell or rent their house now, they're going to have they're going to have two mortgage payments.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the things you can do is you can focus on the pain of, you know, for instance, that seller says, yeah, I'm getting a job transfer, moving in December. Oh, great. Well, where are you moving? Oh, we're moving down to Colorado. Okay, well, that's really neat. So are you having a house that you're buying down there? Okay, I see. So I see it seems like you want to get something taken care of so that you don't have an empty house and have to make two payments. Is that right? And they go, yeah. And you go, oh, yeah, that wouldn't be too good. You know, I had a friend that had to make two house payments, or I had a house that had to make two house payments for like 6 months. It was, you know, it was really tough. So you kind of work the pain in a little bit. And then what you can do is you can relate your solution around solving that pain. So what you can say about the cash offer, and when you go through and find out what they owe, then, you know, a cash offer wouldn't work. Well, quite frankly, yeah, you know, I can see the challenge I'm going to have is that, you know, your house is worth about $200, but you owe about $190. So I wouldn't be able to make a cash offer. In fact, what it seems to me is it looks like even if you listed with a real estate agent, you'd have to probably come out of pocket, you know, $10,000 or $15,000. Is that even an option for you? Would you be able to do that in order to sell your house? And then that's kind of putting some more pain. And then if the seller says, well, no, but I'm looking to sell it myself, you might say, well, okay, so you're looking to, you know, you're going to list it by owner. What happens if you don't sell the house? And then see what they say. Well, are you going to rent it? Okay, well, I might have to rent it. I prefer not to. You know, that's right. Yeah, it'd be a bummer to be a long-distance landlord. I had a house that, you know, I try to manage, blah, blah, blah. You know, tenants can be a pain in the butt. Well, geez, I'll tell you what. I mean, I wish that I could help you. I guess what I would do if I was in your situation, seeing that you don't have a whole lot of equity, but you don't like to be a landlord, have you ever considered selling your house on a lease option or a rent to own? Well, I haven't thought of that. Well, yeah, I do that with some of my properties. It's certainly the lesser of all the evils. You know, it's a lot better than renting, and then you don't have to pay a real estate agent commission. You know, if it was my property, that's probably what I would end up doing. Is that something that you consider? And then, then you can kind of go from there. You know, it's a lot faster to find a buyer with a lease purchase. I mean, you have to know how to qualify them, but you probably have a better chance of finding somebody. And then what you're doing is you're putting yourself on their end, their side of the table. So this is no longer a negotiation. You're kind of helping them. You're being an advisor, so to speak.
Okay.
And so that you're kind of, that's one way you can build rapport, is to be a problem solver with them instead of making an offer on a property, so to speak. And then it could be something like, well, I'll tell you what, I can't quite purchase your house cash, but I might be willing to entertain doing a lease purchase on your place and making monthly payments and buying it at a later date. Of course, I'd have to see it to see if it's something I'd be interested in. Would that be something that you'd consider if I can give you your asking price? And then if they say yeah, then you can say, well, I'll tell you what, why don't I schedule a time to meet? And then you can meet at the property, and you've already established rapport, you've already kind of presented the solution, but you're moving it forward in the sales process. And when you get to the house, then you can walk through and you can make your offer. You can say, hey, if I can, I'd be happy to buy it. I can buy it for what you owe. I can buy it for the $190, and then what you do is you say that, you know, you'd want to pay say $800 a month. Well, if that's not enough to cover their mortgage, they may not be interested in that. And you can say, well, see, in order for me to be responsible for the payments and guarantee the payments, you know, I would plan on subleasing it to a tenant. If you need $1,200, I wouldn't be able to live. I wouldn't be able to sublease it myself. But what I might be able to do is I might be able to add your house to my inventory, and I have other tenant buyers that might be willing to do that. They it wouldn't cost you anything. In fact, you know, they'll pay me a fee for finding a lease purchase, but that's probably the best way I could see about getting you the price and the payments you need. You know, if I was able to do that and it didn't prevent you from, you know, finding a buyer on your own, you know, that's something we can do. Just be very nonchalant, and you've offered to help out. You're not trying to sell them on it, and you're going to have a better chance of getting that contract, I think.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, Mike. Thank you. I think I've been, you know, laying out the plan, or, you know, giving them a lot of information, but not acting as an advisor. Not, you know, I mean, I know it, but it's like I forget that I need to, you know, just understand more where they're coming from and understand
right.
their pain. Yes, I think that's really important. Thank you.
People. I mean, we offer a very logical solution. You know, it's about numbers. We can show logically why our offer makes sense. But if we're not combining that and we're not focusing on the emotional reason, then we're missing more than half the deals, because people make those big decisions based on emotion, and they justify with logic. So if we're able to tap into the emotion and be on the same page with them and get them to see the pain and then see the pleasure, and then we can justify it with the numbers, then that's when you're going to be able to get your more of your deals.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
All right, we'll finish up with you. Is there anybody else that has anything that's going on that I can help?
Hey, Mike, how you doing? David Spaulding here.
David, how's it going, man?
Good. Hey, quick question for you and or the group. Regarding presentations in the home, I completely agree that's where you're going to make the most money, is sitting there in front of them. Are you using any type of a hard copy presentation or something on a laptop that to actually walk through a presentation? Sort of like, I think you were exposed to the sales mastery thing that Duran was doing. Are you doing any of that with Axe clients?
Right. Good question. Is anybody else using a hard copy or iPad, laptop type presentation? Okay.
No, but that sounds like an awesome idea.
So here, okay, how do I answer this? Yes, I used to, and yes, I did buy houses that way, but over time, I've kind of, I went from doing, you know, Dan was there, was really encouraging. And for those of you who don't know, Dan Duran was, he was one of my mentors that I was part of a coaching program, and Dan is, he's a hardcore sales guy. I mean, he's what they consider like a sales animal. He's very good with, you know, in-person, in-home sales. And a lot of big, you know, businesses, like if you ever have like a window company come and come to your house, or a national chain roofing company come to your house to do a bid, a lot of times what they're going to have is a flip book with an actual presentation that they've memorized. And the theory behind those types of presentations is that if you can put the sales process down on paper, where you can give your presentation, you can touch on the seller's, or I guess the buyer's, hot buttons, and you can walk them through a structured presentation, you're going to close more deals. And these companies have kind of proven that their sales staff works better with a system like that. That can be true, but for me, what I ultimately found is that it felt a little bit weird going through a page-by-page presentation, and so I kind of fell back to having information in a presentation with, like, so to speak, like slides, and they were in a flip book, and instead of going from page to page to page, I was having more of a natural conversation with the seller, and we'd sit down. And occasionally, if we get to a point where I could see using that sales book as a reference, I might go, yeah, you know, you've got a really good point. Here's what I found as far as some of the cost to sell. I know you had mentioned that the realtor told you that, you know, it was only going to cost about 8.5% to sell your house. And sure, between a real estate agent commission and and your closing costs, that's going to total by 8%. But here, take a look at this. This is actually a report. It's kind of showing some of the other costs to sell that a lot of sellers don't consider. And if you can see here, it shows the last 300 sales in Kitsap County. And you'll notice that in almost all of these cases that the seller was paying for a portion of the buyer's closing costs. And so I know that the realtor had told you about 8.5% to sell, but you might have to include the buyer's closing costs as well, because that's kind of what's happening now. And as you can see here, the average sales price versus list price is actually about 94%. So usually they're working in about a 6% buyer discount. So we want to figure that as well. So if you have something that you can show them instead of just tell them, if you can actually show them something that kind of backs up what you're saying, then that can be a big asset. I've considered, instead of having like the flip books, I like to take a spiral notebook and a pen. And if I have to explain anything, sometimes I will use that, or I'll put stuff down on paper to show them that how the numbers wind up working out on a particular type of deal. But I don't use like a canned presentation anymore. It kind of felt a little bit unnatural, even though I think that it can work with some people. Does that make sense?
It does. And actually, I guess I'd agree with you. I've done the flip chart and even tried to adapt it onto my iPad, and I found it doesn't allow the seller to be very engaging. It makes you kind of have to have them stop and show them, either the flip chart or the information, however you want to present it in
right.
the presentation. I guess I agree with you, though, if there's something specific, I think people are far more impacted by something they see rather than something they hear. And oftentimes I can kind of get an idea of what it's going to be that they're going to want more information about. So I try to have something, not necessarily in a presentation, but maybe a newspaper article or, like you said, the stats from a given area to help
right.
with that. And then I'll usually leave those with them so that they have, some kind of a takeaway if I don't get something signed when I'm there with them.
Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I have done is, and it's because I've done a lot of lease options. If I'm working with a seller on like an AXE type deal, then a lot of times what I'll do is I'll have my iPad there, and I'll have my website open, and it's part of showing some credibility. I've set up my website so that if you go there, like one of the first things that you see is Better Business Bureau A+, and my Facebook like box with 450 fans, and some other information that can lend to credibility. And then when I click on the page where it says properties for sale, and I have that big list of homes that have been sold, it's like a subconscious way where I won't necessarily specifically point it out, but the seller certainly sees it. And I will use that as a way for me to kind of build a little bit of credibility in, where if they're ever having any question about who I am, it's not like me boasting and saying, oh, I'm the number one lease option guy in Kitsap County. I let them come to their own conclusion, because people don't like to be sold, but the best thing you can do is have them sell themselves, and then that's where you're going to get your most deals.
So let them come to the same conclusion you would have boastfully told them about.
Right. Exactly. But I guess, I think it would probably be, what I think would be beneficial is if you had some information that you could kind of go over when it comes to like the rent-to-own process, if there's anything that you can put into like a short, like one or two page deal, where, you can whip it out, and if the conversation comes to it, that might be able to aid in the process. I don't even know what it would be, but maybe that's something that might be able to put together. I'll see if I can figure something out that might be good that you can bring into the home.
Sounds good.
So, well, cool. Good to hear from you, David. Is there anybody else that's got anything to talk about while we're still on the call? I've got about about 5 more minutes of battery on my phone, I think.
This is Vince. Real quick, this past week I sent out 150 letters, and I have not talked to anyone in that time, but I just checked, and there's 10 voicemails that came in from that campaign so far. So my VA will be calling those, and I should have some lead sheets here pretty quick.
Cool.
Brian Sorensen came by the my place in Bremerton I'm fixing up, and he had some thoughts, and I think I'm going to have him do some of the general contractor stuff I need done there.
Cool. Actually, I was over there today, and
okay.
I walked through and I talked to, is it Eric? Is that the guy who's doing your painting?
Yeah.
Yeah, I talked to him, and when you're kind of mentioning an email to me about some of the patches that might need to be done on the inside for painting. I don't know specifically where they were at, but looks like you're doing interior and exterior paint.
Yeah, I think the exterior will give it some nice curb appeal. We ripped out all sorts of cables that were making it look trashy on the outside.
And then how about flooring?
Yeah, the flooring's got to be replaced. I was thinking of getting laminate of some kind of fake wood stuff for durability, but I don't know.
I think that's a good call. I actually I used that on my property on Houston that I just bought, which is a couple streets over, and it's a little bit more expensive than you can get for carpet. But I've gone through some tenants that have kind of trashed carpet, so I think that's a good call.
I think I need, there's some several patch jobs on the walls throughout the different rooms, and they kind of draw my attention to them, and I'm probably going to have white on the walls, and it's probably going to be a gloss finish. So I think I'm going to have a drywall guy redo them so that they, I don't know, it's just
kind of
they look better.
Right. I agree.
I'm interested, though, any thoughts you had on just making this thing rentable again?
So my recommendation is you're going to you want it to look clean. So laminate flooring, new paint. One thing you might consider, and I'm trying to remember, it looked like that the baseboards are really old and look like they've kind of been painted into the walls.
Yeah.
If you got to pop, you're going to have to pop the baseboards off anyway in order to put your flooring in. So my recommendation is to get some new baseboard molding. It's going to be pretty cheap. And then just have them nail that in because it's going to make it look a lot sharper, a lot cleaner. So I would do that. And then that's probably good. I'm trying to remember the kitchen. I can't even remember how the kitchen looked.
The counter. I think I need new countertops. I think I can get by with the cupboards that are there now.
Okay.
Is there something in fashion right now I need to be using?
So you're probably going to be good with just using a nice laminate countertop. You can do two ways. You can just pop the entire thing off and get the pre-molded laminate that's in like 8-foot length and have them put that. Or you can, if you've got a good surface, like a plywood surface, you can actually just put the rolled laminate that you glue down. You take a router and you cut the edges. Then you're going to have to put a backsplash. So, I mean, it's probably just good enough just to get the pre-done slabs of laminate with the 4-inch backsplash authority on there.
Okay.
And then, replacing, getting new knobs on the cabinet can help kind of clean it up a little bit. You can get light fixtures super, super cheap. You know, we're basically paying like $10 for a flush mount light fixture. I don't know how the appliances are. But you want clean appliances. You want like a clean look. That's what renters are looking for. You don't have to make it super super fancy. But if it's clean and they feel like they're not like sleeping in somebody else's cat pee, then you're really good.
A lot of the outlets are 2-prong. Do you think I need to update that?
To do it right, you're going to have to do it to rewire it because that's the old wiring, which is not grounded outlets. If you do a 3-pronged outlet, you're really not supposed to do a 3-prong outlet on a 2-prong circuit because then if it's not grounded. The only way to do it right is you can put a 3-prong outlet on a two-prong circuit if you have a GFCI breaker. So in the breaker box, then you, it's like, are you familiar with a GFCI outlet is?
Yeah.
It's the outlets in the kitchen and bath that if you drop the hairdryer into the tub, it'll automatically turn off. So that's how you can protect the outlet from, you know, somebody sticking their fingers in there or something like that, where you can have a ground, you can have a three-prong outlet that's not grounded, but it's protected by a GFCI breaker protecting the entire circuit. Now, those breakers are pretty expensive. They're probably going to be like $60 to $70 for a breaker. But that would be the only way that you'd be able to do a three-prong outlet without actually swapping out the wire. And the challenge with those duplexes over there is I think that it's slab on grade, so you don't have a crawl space. Is that the case in that one?
Yeah.
Yeah, it is. Since you don't have a crawl space, I replaced the wiring in my place on Bloomington. But it takes more wiring, it takes more work because you can't go underneath the house to feed your wire. You have to basically go in the attic and drop your line down to the outlet, and you got to bring another line from the outlet back up to the attic, over to the next outlet, drop it down again, drop it back up, and keep on moving over. So it's tedious, and that might not be. I don't think that you necessarily should replace the wiring now. Get some other tenants, you know, get some more cash flow, and then maybe that'll be a project you do in like 3 or 4 years.
Okay, yeah, that was kind of my question. Is that a deal breaker for a lot of people in renting a place?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Or you don't have to get a GFCI breaker. If you want to have at least one outlet in each bedroom that will be a three-prong outlet, you can just get a GFCI outlet. So at that point, you're spending like $12 to $15 for the outlet,
mm-hmm.
and you can put that on a two-wire circuit. And that will be GFC, that will be protected where they can plug in a three-prong plug.
Okay, that's really good to know.
Yeah. In fact, you could do that on if you find out which is the first outlet in the circuit, then you can protect that one, and then all the outlets behind it will be GFCI protected. They just won't be three-prong.
Okay.
All right. If there's anything else, guys, I'm about to lose battery here, so you can email me, and I'll try to get the call up sometime later tonight if you want to re-listen to anything.
Sounds good.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, Mike.
Right,
have
guys.
A good evening.
Thank you.
Yep, you too. Take care. See ya.
Thanks,
bye.
Mike.